Celeste is a award-winning journalist, author, speaker. I hope you'll go to her book signing after this particular session. It's going to be an interactive session, so don't get too comfortable. Celeste will talk for a while. In the last 10 minutes of the session, we will have a Q&A. So I'll pop back up, and there's microphones on both sides over there. Okay? So without further ado, I'll introduce Celeste Headlee.
Thanks. This is interactive because, and here's why. I have a TEDx talk. Some of you may have seen it. It's called 10 Ways to Have a Better Conversation. It has about 13 million views and change. So I'm not going to go over that material. It's only 11 minutes long. I'm wasting your time if I go over that. I also have a book that's like some 60,000 words. You can get that. I'm sure you can probably pirate a copy, which doesn't make HarperCollins happy, but I don't want to go over that either. What I want to do is like give you some specific, where the rubber meets the road, techniques. I want you to leave this room having techniques, strategies, specific things that you can do to be better in conversation and just be happier. I hate those. And I hear a lot of speakers, because I'm a speaker, so you end up at these conferences where you're listening to other people. And I loathe it when what you're hearing is all these, be your best self and reach for the stars. And I'm a journalist. I'm like, exactly how does one do that? So I am here to tell you exactly how one does that. I've been a journalist with National Public Radio and PRI and a bunch of other networks, the BBC, PBS, for a very, very long time, like 19 years. But I didn't train as a journalist. My degrees are all in music. I'm a professional opera singer. And when I don't have a cold. So I had to do all my training on the back end, which means I was a working journalist when I was desperately trying to get training in how to be a journalist. So when I first started trying to figure out how to be a better interviewer, I went and consulted the best advice that I could possibly find, right? And most of that is about how to have a better conversation. And so I read every book I could put my hands on. I went to conferences like this one. I went and did trainings. And what I found was that the advice was terrible. I mean, it was complete crap. And I know that because I would go back to my studio and I would try it out and it didn't work. Okay? Like looking somebody in the eye when you're talking to them and maintaining eye contact is actually quite awkward. And it doesn't, do you feel uncomfortable right now? It does not work. And then them training you how to nod and say, uh-huh, and repeat back what you've heard. Basically, the best advice we've been getting on conversation for a very long time is teaching us how to pretend like we're paying attention. And it's so much more authentic when you pay attention. And you know, the thing is that I could stand up here and say, okay, so in your conversations, you need to listen and pay attention. But again, how the F does one do that, frankly? So my first step was sort of to figure out why we don't pay attention. And there's really good reasons why we don't. There's really good reasons why we don't listen. And the first one of those reasons is that human beings don't listen well. We don't. And if you have a baby, you know we don't come out of the womb knowing how to listen. We come out of the womb knowing how to scream. Some of us never stop. But you have to actually be taught how to listen. This is what we have discovered. And this is not a function of the cell phones that you have and probably in your hands. That it has nothing to do with smartphones. This research began back in the 1940s and 50s when the man that we call the father of listening, Ralph Nichols, began to study listening. And his eventual conclusion was human beings are terrible listeners. We are. And that means we are gonna have to work at it. It also means that in schools, you have to actually take a class in listening before there's any improvement in your listening skills. You don't learn it by osmosis in your history class. You don't learn it during any meetings. You only learn it by actually studying and practicing how to listen. And it's daily. It's not information that you learn and memorize and then you're done. That would be like if you go to the gym and you get a totally great pump and then you're done for the rest of your life. That is not the way that it works. Like, you have to practice it every single day. And part of the reason for that is, number one, the average person speaks at somewhere around 150 words per minute. The average person listens at about 400 to 450 words per minute. And that means when you hear people say, clear your mind, that is also crap. You cannot clear your mind. Your mind is going to be thinking thoughts constantly, and they're going to be, your mind is going to be thinking thoughts much faster than the other person is expressing thoughts. And your thoughts that are in your head are distracting you. You're thinking things that you find more interesting than what the person is saying. So they're sitting there talking, and you suddenly remember that something that they say reminds you of that time you met Ellen DeGeneres, and you stop listening to them. You're just waiting for them to finish talking so that you can tell your story about Ellen. And this is what Stephen Covey, who wrote The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, this is what he called the basic problem, which is that we don't listen with the intent to understand. We listen with the intent to reply. And this is not an American problem. This is not a generational problem for those people who are like, yeah, those millennials, they never listen. Actually, millennials are better listeners than people who are 50 or 60 or older. Scientifically speaking, they're better listeners. They're not great conversationalists, but they listen better. And part of the reason of that, I think, we don't actually have a proven reason because correlation is not causation, but I believe part of the reason for that is because the older you get, the more you assume you know what somebody's about to say. The older you get, the more you think you already know. And so you don't listen anymore except to give advice. We love to give unrequested advice, which is a terrible idea. Terrible. Even Taylor Swift says the one piece of advice she have is don't ever give advice. So basically that's what I'm here to do for you today is take some of this research, and it, my book has about a billion footnotes in it. There's a ton of scientific research in there. So we don't need to go over that. What I really want to do is show you how that works in real life. So first, number one, we're all going to be talking. Be prepared to stand up and speak, and that's totally fine. But first, I want to sort of define some terms, right? So first, tell me what you think. I forgot to bring a pen up. Let's talk about what is civil conversation. Thank you very much. All right, so I want you to tell me, how do you show respect to other people? When you're thinking to yourself, I need to show respect to someone, tell me, how do you do that? Don't interrupt, it's a great one. How else? Stop talking, listen. Introduce yourself, that's a great one. Eye contact is, you have to be careful with that one. Ask questions, that's a great one. How else do you show respect?
No multitasking,
absolutely. Say their name. Respond to them. Be pleasant. I am not always pleasant. Yes, but we're trying to figure out what is showing respect. All right, so we have a list of like 10 things here. Now, how do you know when someone else respects you? What are the things that people do that show you that they respect you? They're listening. Sorry, what was the one back there? I think she also said listening. They listened. Ask for your opinion. Sharing with you? What do you mean sharing?
Okay. Present. Don't interrupt.
You mean they acknowledge you. We're talking about how you acknowledge you, which is also a little bit like, what does that mean? They hear you. How else do you know when you're being respected? They what? They're focused. Positive body language, like what? You mean not like sideways working on the computer? Nope, we're talking about things that tell you that someone else respects you. Okay.
So, like, I'm thinking about, I know my mom respects me, so she tells me the truth. Like, she tells me it's true. But she lives in Connecticut, so she's not always, I can't tell if she's not I can't tell if she's not, I don't know, rolling her eyes when she's saying, like, I don't know, but I believe what she's saying to me because of the relationship I have with her. Those all just sound like descriptive words of what is listening.
Right, but not every mother respects every child. My mother can't stand me. So how is it you know, what are the specific things your mom does that tells you, I know she respects me because? How do you know that?
She gives me opportunity to fail.
That's a good one. She said, she gives me the opportunity to fail. Mm-hmm. All right, here's the reason we're making these lists. Because one of the best ways to know that you're about what things you're screwing up on in conversation is to make a list like this. So here's our issue. Here's our problem. Science tells us that we, all of us, vastly overestimate our own conversational skills. That's just the truth. We all think we're better in conversation than we actually are. And I want to make sure we have defined terms. A really good conversation is an exchange of ideas that are understood between two people. Doesn't mean they're agreed upon. A good conversation can be a disagreement. But a good conversation is A, mutual, a sharing of ideas. It's also clear both people understand one another and respond to one another. We are not as good at that as we think that we are. But we're quite good at identifying when someone else is bad at it. So one of the exercises that I often do when I go into workplaces, I say, okay, write down three things that bug you the most when other people do them in conversation. Right? Number one is almost always interrupt. Okay? What's another one? Tell me a pet peeve you have of what people do when they're talking. Multitasking, right, they're staring at their phones. Interrupt without caring that they're interrupting. Yeah. Dismissive in what way?
They don't care what you have to say.
Right, they're just like a train.
Yeah, they're going on to whatever they want to talk.
Right. So then after you've made this list of things that bug you the most when other people do them, write it down, take it to the people that know you best, and say, here's this list of problems that people have in conversation. Tell me how many of these I do. And you might be very surprised by what happens. And I say this from personal experience. It might very much surprise you how the things that bother you the most when other people do them are the things that you do to other people. It is very difficult to be self-aware. And to go back to why this happens, because I want to just take the whole shame and blame off of it. It is difficult. It is really difficult to do what I'm talking about. And one of the big eye-openers for me was this research done at Harvard in 2014 using the fMRI, the functional magnetic resonance imaging machine. And what they found was that talking about yourself activates the exact same pleasure center in the brain as sex and heroin. It is, and chocolate. It is inherently pleasurable, bless you, to talk about yourself. In fact, the people, the participants in the study, accepted a lower salary. They were offered more money if they would talk about anything else. And they took the lower salary to continue talking about themselves, what they liked, what they thought. And let me take this one step further. How many of you have ever seen an MRI machine? Yeah. There's no way these people knew if there was anyone else in the room with them. They were inside an MRI machine. So break this down for me. These are people who took lower pay to keep talking about themselves to possibly nobody. And still, the pleasure center lit up. That is how pleasurable it is to talk about yourself. The problem is that it screws with our perception of our conversations. Because that means you have been in a job interview where you came out feeling fantastic. And you didn't get the job because the other people didn't feel that great. Or let's take it one step further to a date where you felt there was a real connection. And that was not shared. So this is part of our challenge, is to first become really aware of what we're doing when we're talking to people, and how often we're actually listening, and how often we're simply waiting to reply. Okay? So this list that we've made here, you see how many of them are shared, right? How many things that are both about showing respect and feeling respect. And most of them, as you point out, are about listening. But we're terrible at listening. Which means, in essence, we're pretty terrible at showing respect. Ba-dump. Okay, so let's do some exercises. First of all, the one thing we can't do, because of the way that the room is, which I normally do, is I would have you all play a game of catch. And I fully recommend that you do this when you're at home. In fact, one of the senior VPs at ESPN keeps a ball in his desk at all times now. And the reason that you play catch is because a friendly game of catch, is a perfect model for a healthy conversation. Because A, you cannot throw more times than you catch. It is literally has to be balanced. The other reason it's a good model is because when you are playing a friendly game of catch, one that you both will have fun, you're thinking about the other person. You're setting them up to catch the ball and return it to you. You're setting them up for success. You're not just thinking about your own throws, right? And this is something to keep in mind when you're having a conversation, that it is not about all what you're saying. It's about both of you being successful at what's happening, even when you disagree, which makes it difficult. All right, so get up and find a partner. Stand up. Try to keep the noise down if you can. Keep the noise down, please. Okay, quiet down, quiet down, quiet down. Here's what this exercise is, and if you've been in improv, you're gonna do great at this. You're going to have a conversation in which someone's gonna say something, and after that first initial sentence, every other sentence begins with yes and. Every other sentence.
Every
Not, I mean, every sentence after that first one, right? Not yes, but. Yes, and. And again, try not to be too loud because it's going to become deafening, but go. Okay, good. 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 Wrap it up. Okay. Okay, wrap it up. You can sit if you want to, but I'm going to make you stand up in a second so you don't have to. Who had a little bit of difficulty? Why was it difficult?
I wanted to
put
but.
She wanted to say but. How many of you wanted to say but? Just one T, but. Okay. Who else had difficulty for another reason? Yeah.
It's hard when you disagree. Say
yes. Yeah. And how did you get over that? That's a really good way to do that. So here's one of the things, you know, people ask me all the time how to have difficult conversations, because it does feel like most conversations are difficult these days. Number one, you have to stop avoiding those conversations. You have to stop, okay? That we have been avoiding them for generation after generation after generation, and I feel like we can now finally admit that's not working, right? So that's the first step, is to stop avoiding these conversations. Now, the purpose of this exercise is that you have to accept what's given to you. You accept what's given to you and then add on to it, instead of denying what they've said immediately. You don't need to rebut everything you disagree with. You don't need to be sitting there thinking about whether you agree or disagree at all moments. You don't need to do that. Sometimes it just needs to be, I'm keeping this conversation going with this person. And I will sometimes play a game. Like, I work for NPR. There are tons of people who meet me in private life and for whatever reason want to immediately talk to me about politics, even though I'm like at a party. So, and it's almost always the people with the most extreme views. I'm a journalist, so my views are almost entirely by definition centrist, okay? So I will sometimes play a game with those people. And I'll say, listen, we're not going to agree on whatever that is you're talking about. So I bet you in 5 questions or less, I can find a subject we 100% agree on. Tacos? Dogs? Right? In 5, I've still not lost. In 5 questions or less, you can find something you agree with somebody on. And it's okay if you don't agree on whatever that was. That's fine. But you have to remember how long time is. And I don't care if they're 90 years old and somebody from rural Alabama, white person, right? And you're an African, actually from Africa, who's an immigrant to the US. It doesn't matter how different your experiences is. The fact that you are living on this planet at the exact same time as that other person gives you more in common than you think. You are sharing the same history. You have things in common. And you can talk about them. And it doesn't have to be an argument. Just remember to stop saying yes, but all the time, which is often what we say. Okay, so I want to do a game called Zip, Zap, Zop. And for this, we need a volunteer, 10 volunteers. 10 people. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Come on up. All right, let's go over here because you have more space. And get in a circle. Okay. So we're going to pretend, everyone get close the circle in here. Okay. We're going to pretend like what I'm holding right here is a little ball of energy. And you're going to pass it to one another. Now, in order to pass an invisible ball, that only works if you make eye contact first, right? They need to see that it's coming to them. Then you need to catch it, make eye contact with someone else, and pass it on. Now, the thing is, while you're doing this, you're cycling through zip, zap, zop, right? So I throw it to you, zip, And then you're going to throw it to somebody else and say zap.
Zap.
Nope, while you're throwing it, zap.
Zap.
And then zop. And then you start over, right?
Zip. Zap. Zop. Zip. Zap. Zop. Zip. Zap. Zop. Zip. Zap. Zop. Zip. Zap. Zop.
Okay, stop for just a second. Who finds this difficult? Everybody, okay.
Yeah, me.
No, it's totally fine. Why is it difficult?
You don't know what is coming.
You don't know what is coming, right? What else?
You have to keep track of
zip, zap, zop.
You have to keep it.
You want to keep it?
You don't
get to keep it. Oh. That is a unique answer.
So, you have to make eye contact with everyone almost at the same time.
Right.
It becomes difficult to choose who to.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So you're having to keep track of a whole bunch of things in your mind, but also make individual eye contact with someone and then pass something to them. Okay, it's a really good model of a business meeting. Okay? That means that if you're in zip zap zop and you're not actually paying attention, and you're doing whatever, multitasking, it all falls apart. And you may not be aware of it, but that's what happens in a meeting or a group discussion also. So one of the things that you have to get used to doing is really imagining that ball in your hand as though I'm giving this to you, right? So I'm going zip, and you're going to catch it. Now, this time, try not to go faster. Slow it down and catch the ball, and then pass it on. Go. Okay, is it easier?
Yes.
It's a lot easier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Go back to your seats. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to do is use some open-ended questions. So again, find a partner, try to find someone you didn't talk to last time. But here's the purpose of this one. One of you is going to think of something about yourself. Maybe it's where you work, maybe it's where you grew up. I want the other person to find out that information, all the basics of that information, but you may only use questions that begin with who, what, where, when, why, or how. Okay? And the questions all need to be short. You can't cheat and go, what were you doing on the night when you did this? Was it at the... No. Who, what, where, when, why, or how? Get the basics of the information and check how long it took you. Okay? So, up. Find a partner and ask them some open-ended questions. If you got the information, then sit down. You just need to answer their questions. Answer them honestly. You're not trying to conceal anything. Correct. No, you're just asking questions. You got it? If you got it, then sit down. If you got the information, go ahead and sit down. So if the other person hasn't figured it out, just tell them. Just tell them what it was and have a seat. Have a seat. Tell them the info, sit down. Okay, who found that difficult? Yeah, that was hard. Why was it difficult? You don't know what to ask, right? Well, that's part of it. It's kind of like 20 questions, right? I mean, to that extent, you're trying to figure out a mystery, right? But to a certain extent, what you just did was basically the same as a job interview. When you're interviewing somebody for a job, you're basically trying to find out some interesting information about them, and you don't know what it is, right? And one of the best ways to do all of that is with what's called open-ended questions. And we rarely use them. We tend to, A, we don't ask questions as often as we think we do. We vastly overestimate the number of questions we ask. Even though at the beginning of this, we mentioned many times that asking questions is one of the ways we know that we can show both show respect and feel respected. And yet we don't ask questions as often as we think that we do. But the other thing that we don't do is when we ask questions, we try to retain control of this conversation. We use our question not as a way to just lay the field open for the other person to answer as they will, but we kind of guess at what their answer is going to be, right? Are you from here, or are you from, you're back from back east? Are you from like down here, down south, or you just need to ask where are you from? But we can't quite let go enough. So we end up asking a lot of yes or no questions by making our questions too long, by making them too convoluted, by trying to answer them while we're asking them. And frankly, this happens in my profession all the time. You've probably all heard an interviewer who asks questions that are like 30 seconds long. Bless you. But it's not efficient. And it's not a shared experience between the two of you. One of the examples I use all the time when I'm talking to journalists is we love to ask people and how they're feeling, but actually describe how they're feeling when we do it. For example, I'd be like, you know, you just survived a hurricane. Were you terrified? That must have been terrifying. Maybe they weren't, right? But then, of course, then they feel stupid if they didn't feel terrified, so they're going to say, yeah, I was terrified. You've basically asked a yes or no question. Were you terrified, yes or no? And all you need to do is ask, how did you feel? What was that like? What happened? What did you hear? What did you do? You know, it's funny because I was at the TED Summit in 2016, and this nuclear physicist from Japan comes up to me and he said, you know, I've watched your TED talk like 12 times, and I still have no clue how you start a conversation. How do you start it? And I said, well, you know, where in Japan are you from? And he said, I'm from Kyoto. And I said, well, I've only ever been to Tokyo, so help me out. Is it as crowded as Tokyo is? Or he says, no, you've seen the pictures of the cherry trees and the temples. I said, yeah, but do you live in apartments? Are there actually houses and neighborhoods? He goes, yeah, there's, you know, we have houses. And I said, yeah, but with like yards? And he starts describing Kyoto to me. And about 5 or 10 minutes later, I said, that's how you start a conversation. You ask people questions they know the answer to, about something they care about. And it's really simple, actually. People have tattoos, ask them about it. People wear shirts for teams, ask them about it. People wear interesting jewelry, ask them about it. People have cool haircuts, they have cool necklaces. She got her necklace at White House Black Market 3 years ago and it goes with everything. You ask them questions they can answer about stuff they care about. It always shocks me when people say, oh, I have no idea what to say in conversations. Yes, you don't even need to say anything. And this is true for introverts. And I was telling someone earlier who is on the spectrum. I said, the pressure is off. Remember how pleasurable it is for people to talk about themselves? Let them talk about themselves. Then not only will they feel great, but they'll also think you're like the best conversationalist they've ever met. It is absolutely your secret weapon when it comes to conversations, is let people talk about themselves. You had a question? She says in a business meeting, you have to ask questions in a way. An open question is good, but you don't want the conversation to be derailed, which is totally fine. But you can use, actually, open-ended questions are much better at asking specific things. Like sometimes people will be running on and on and on about technical things, and I will say, stop. I don't actually need to know any of that. It's interesting, but what do you need by tomorrow? What is our next step? What do you want from me? What action are you expecting me to take? It's the best way also to interrupt people who will not stop talking. Because you're showing that you're listening, right? I will say, okay, I'm hearing you, but you're making my brain explode. So what do you want from me? What is it that you need specifically? Sometimes they will appreciate that you've done that, because sometimes we all get verbal diarrhea and we're like thinking in our heads, why am I still talking? Why am I still talking? And you can't stop, right? So sometimes people will appreciate that you hone in on those things. Okay, I want to talk really quickly about shift and support responses. Because this is a concept that a sociologist calls Charles Durber. Says we all suffer from it, and Americans in particular. Something called conversational narcissism. Yeah, it's a lot. So what happens in a conversation, and it's because it is so pleasurable, is that we think we express empathy by telling people about our similar experiences to theirs. So somebody says to you, oh, my son broke his leg, he's in the hospital. And we say, oh, my brother broke his leg last year, or my nephew broke his leg last year. Everything's going to be fine. Oh, it was terrible, blah, 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 blah. We think, we fool ourselves into believing that what we're doing is expressing empathy. And we're not. I just want to be clear, because I get the most pushback on this than any other. I know it feels good to offer that similar experience. But I might point out that it feels good to talk about yourself. This is called conversational narcissism because what you're doing is shifting the attention in the conversation. Somebody comes to you and says, I need a new pair of shoes. And you say, oh my God, me too. I've had these for like 4 years. You have shifted the attention to yourself. Or they say, I'm going to go ask my boss for a raise. And you say, oh, I need to do that too. They need to pay me what I'm worth. You have shifted the attention to yourself. A support response is instead, I need to go buy a new pair of shoes. What kind of shoes are you looking for? Do you want me to go with you? I need to go ask my boss, when are you going to do it? How much are you asking for? Do you want me to practice with you? How can I help you? That's a support response. Sometimes we shift attention in a passive way by withholding attention, until they do what we want. And that looks like this. When they say, I need to go ask my boss for a raise, and you say, oh. And they go, yeah, I really, you know, I found out that another person in my same job is making like 8,000 more than I am. And you're like, oh, it's terrible. And they say, you need a raise too, right? And you go, yes. I think we do this all the time. We are constantly shifting it back to ourselves instead of supporting. And that's why it's called conversational narcissism. And again, it is difficult to break out of the habit because doing the other thing feels good. And we feel that we are good when we do it. And we are not good when we're doing it. But the other thing I want to point out is that oftentimes this is seen as something that you're giving to other people, right? Like, it's hard to listen to people, it's hard to focus to them, but we're going to do this for the other person. This is the gift we're giving them. And that, no, it is not. Because frankly, even if they're a douchebag and they're not listening, they're not appreciating, they don't care that you're spending that time listening to them, you're still getting the same benefit. And when I say benefit, I'm just not just talking about like soft skills. I'm talking about people who tend to spend more time listening live longer, are less prone to depression, less prone to get diabetes, end up having a happier and more fulfilled life as they report it after the age of 80. You are physiologically and psychologically created to benefit from conversations with other people. And let me take this one step further. We are the only species on the planet that suffers from confirmation bias. Did you know this? Do you guys all know what confirmation bias is? It's where you believe something, and someone shows you pretty concrete evidence that you're wrong, and it makes you believe it harder. It is nonpartisan. Both conservatives and liberals are equally prone to confirmation bias, and we are the only species that suffers from it. And that makes sense to me, because consider this for just a moment. Consider the gazelle at a lake who firmly believes there are no crocodiles in the lake, and you show them comprehensive evidence, including video evidence, that there are multiple crocodiles in the lake, and the gazelle says, no, I believe there are no crocodiles in that lake, and then they're eaten and gazelles are wiped off the face of the planet. It doesn't help us. You think it doesn't help us. But here's the thing. In some ways, confirmation bias is a strength. And the reason I say that is because confirmation bias means we need each other. We need each other to be a check on our own screw-ups and logical fallacies. I rely on you, strangers I've never met or spoken to tell me when I'm saying something ridiculous. The problem is that has broken down. Because number one, we're not listening to other people. And number two, we're not believing them when they tell us things. So the hive mind of humanity, which is how we have survived on this planet, is through a hive mind. In other words, human beings are not the fastest. We're not the strongest. We lose out one-on-one with a mosquito in many cases. And I hate to tell you this, but we are also not the smartest species on the planet. Dolphins can project a 3D holographic image of a fish into another dolphin's brain. The way that we have survived on this planet is because if you mess with one human, you are messing with all the humans. We help each other. We are the best communicators on the planet. We can specifically ask for certain things. We can describe a problem that we're having in detail. And the way that that formula works is because we also have this thing called empathy for one another, which means I'm usually willing to help you out even when it does nothing for me in return. But again, the problem is that empathy has dropped by 40% in the past 30 years. And most of that has occurred since the year 2000. And so therefore, if here is this quality that has helped us survive and thrive on this planet. It is the reason we are successful. And we're losing it because we won't listen to each other. It's a problem. And that's why all of these so-called soft skills are not really that soft. They're not soft. Human beings are social creatures. And if we continue to bury our faces in our phones so that our Uber driver won't make eye contact and maybe talk to us, we're in trouble. People who have regularly engaged in small talk live longer, less likely to suffer a fatal cardiac event, less prone to depression. More than a third of Americans have never met their neighbors, but people who know their neighbors live longer, less likely to get burglarized, less likely to suffer from diabetes, less likely to have a heart attack. So here's all this stuff that's really good for us because we are social and emotional creatures that rely on one another, and we are trying to isolate ourselves so that we don't hear things we don't like and don't talk to people who don't agree. It's a problem. So stop thinking about what you're doing for other people when you listen to them, and start thinking about what you're doing for yourself when you listen to them. And go into your conversations not to show what you know, but to learn from the other person. I have a game at this point where I don't leave a conversation until I've learned something. Like sometimes with my employees, I'll be like, I need to end this, just tell me something I don't know, quick. And they'll tell me some irrelevant fact that they know. All right. We have time for one more exercise. And this one is kind of similar to yes and. And what I want you to do is find another partner, hopefully someone you haven't partnered with before. And you're going to do basically the same structure about yes and, except after the first person says the one thing, every other sentence begins with thank you. Okay? So someone says something, and after that, you start every sentence with thank you. Go. Wrap it up and have a seat. Nice work, everybody. What was different about that conversation? How was it changed? What? You got a lot of compliments? Nothing wrong with that. What else was different? Yeah. It's a good point. She said you have to listen harder in order to say some, you know, say thank, find something to thank them for. What else? It was pleasant. Right. Did you guys, people tend to smile? Okay. So in your conversations, you can make it a practice to just say the thank you in your head. Thank you in your head. Because here's the thing, and this is especially true in work conversations or in difficult conversations. I mentioned earlier, and if I didn't, I'll mention it now. Scientists have said that the one thing, the most rare thing you can get is objective feedback. You almost never get it. If you ask your friend, oh my God, do I look great in this? And they say, yeah, you look great. And you're like, are you telling me the truth? Just tell me the truth. And like, I'm totally telling you the truth. They are totally not telling you the truth. And that doesn't mean they are purposely saying you look great when you don't. It means they love you, and that influences what they're saying to you. So you are almost never getting objective feedback. And so you have to keep this in mind, that when someone's talking to you, sometimes it can be scary. And what you want to encourage is honesty. Who said that honesty was a sign of respect? You did. It is. It is the ultimate sign of respect that they have in you, your trust in you, that they can be honest with you. And therefore, you want to encourage that, and you want to thank people when they're ready to share. Yeah. Can you hold on just 1 second? In 5 minutes, we're going to take questions. Actually, we're supposed to do questions now. So let me wrap up really quickly. I know. Sorry about that. Yeah, I wanted to do that last exercise. That's the one last thing I want to tell you, is that even when someone is telling you something you don't want to hear, and even if they are the douchebag about it, find something in there that you can use. Find, is there a nugget of truth in what they're saying, even if they are being a jerk about it? Or is there something that's not true but is still useful for you to know? Find what is useful and toss out the rest. And sorry, dearie, yes, if you have a question, come to the mic so everyone can hear you.
How do you handle it when you give an honest opinion and they rebuke you for it and think that you're criticizing them in the wrong way? What happens when it goes south?
Okay, so it often goes south. People don't actually get honest feedback usually, and so they hate it. And so I just say, first of all, people know me well enough that they don't ask me anymore unless they actually want my honest opinion. But if it's going south, like I can see in their face, right? And I will say, looks like you're not taking this very well, and I'm very sorry about that, but I am trying to be honest with you because I respect you. And I want you to be better. Like, you and I have the same goal. I want to help you. If I can help you, I'm going to help you. And the best thing I can do for you is tell you honestly. I said, but if you don't believe me, go ask, you know, go get other opinions. Buddha says, don't believe me. Figure it out for yourself. Try it. Test it in the field. You know, be Buddha. Get other opinions too. You know, you ask me an opinion and that's it. And I want to help you be better.
Okay. Awesome. I have one more question. I tend to want to give advice.
Don't do that.
Unsolicited. How do I stop myself? Yeah, exactly. How do I stop myself from doing it? And when I don't even know sometimes I'm doing it. And I don't like it when other people do it to me. So
yeah,
it's like, how do I stop myself?
You have to stop. one way that you can do that is start empowering other people to tell you when you're doing it. And then be nice about it when they point it out.
Okay,
so my son enjoys when I do that to him because he loves pointing it out. Like, I was like, Grant, I want you to help me to stop swearing. And he's like, oh, yes. So have other people help you out. Say, hey, if I give you unsolicited advice, I want you to tell me, you know, and then thank them because it's hard. Yeah. Question.
Hi. This is in the same vein, but I'm actually asking a question based on your last panel. It came up about figuring out how someone listens, because everyone, I guess, listens differently. But I didn't hear any tips of how do you figure out how they listen?
By listening to them, right? Like, one of the ways that you figure that out is by figuring out when they have understood you and when they haven't.
So can you explain more, though?
Yes. So, for example, if I'm sitting here talking to you and I'm telling you, okay, in order to do this, you have to like be watching really carefully and wait for the light bulb to go on, right? And then I'm going to say, do you understand what I mean? And you're going to either say yes or no. Hopefully you're going to tell me the truth. So at some point, if you keep doing that with someone, you will begin to realize what those words were that you said, how you expressed it, where they understood, and the times that you expressed it when they didn't understand. It's, okay. You know, I'm an opera singer, and it's like when you're teaching someone voice, sometimes some people learn voice best when you say, okay, imagine you're in a cloud, and your voice is rising up above the cloud. And then that does nothing for me. So I'm like, just tell me what my muscles are doing and my ribs and where to move. Like, I need to know the anatomy, right?
Yeah.
So each teacher is figuring out which words work and what they don't.
Based on the response that they get.
Based on how well they understand.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. We have time for one more question.
Hello. So you had mentioned that empathy has dropped off 40% in the last 30 years.
Yes.
And most of that starting the year 2000. I was curious what your theories or
cell
if
phones.
It's based on... that makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you. I have to run to a book signing, so if you want to come talk to me, come talk to me down at the book signing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Celeste. The book signing is over in the exhibition area if you'd like to see her again. Thank you very much.